Hello and welcome to the Blessed Podcast, episode 8. I'm Ian Blessed and I will be joined by my regular guest, Andrew Masters, to discuss the final and the end of Euro 2024. Great to have you along, Andy.
Thanks, Ian. Good to join you.
Now, it was the final last night and we had certainly an interest in it because England were in the final again for the second time in 3 years, two Euro finals now in a row for the team. And sadly, England lost, but I felt that they put in a lot of effort. And unfortunately, to cut it down very short, is that Spain were just better than us and they'd been the best team of the tournament, I felt.
Yeah, I have to agree. They were clearly better than us. I mean, I think the first half was relatively even, quite cagey. There wasn't a huge amount of chances, and England kept the ball reasonably well. Spain had quite a bit of possession as well. Neither side really carved out anything particularly clear-cut. Once the second half started, Spain just started to pull away. England struggled to hang on to the ball, and you felt it was only a matter of time before Spain got their goal. And I have to admit, when they scored that first goal, I did feel that that might actually be the decider. But, England showed a lot of character to come back, and that equaliser was quality, absolute quality finish. It was just disappointing we didn't kick on and really try and go for the winner. We equalised, and then we started sitting back again and inviting pressure. And as you say, Spain have so much class. They have been the best team at the tournament, and they got the chances they needed to win the match. And they had more than one chance. We had very few number of chances, really, in the match. So I agree, on balance, I think Spain were the worthy winners, and England once again just have to deal with the fact that they haven't quite been good enough.
I think as the game wore on, especially in the first half, Spain started off so strongly and it was a real worry that Spain were going to score and it was going to be a pretty awful night, I think. But then we kept them at nil-nil until half time. But then that goal straight after half time really gave us a knock. Then we started fighting back, and as you say, Cole Palmer's goal was fantastic. And it's just a shame that with 4 minutes to go we conceded. And then they clear off the line twice. I mean, Simon saved really well, and then Olmo, who's been fantastic in the tournament, headers off the line from Gueye's header. I mean, we were so close to taking it to extra time, but I just felt that if it went to extra time, I think they would still score because they just had that extra bit of quality that England lacked for most of the tournament, unfortunately.
Absolutely. I mean, it wasn't as if we were dazzling in every single match. We were very underwhelming in the group stages, and I guess we came alive after that incredible overhead kick against Slovakia. That was sort of the catalyst for our Euro 2024 campaign, really. We were just alive. We were playing amazing football at times after that, much more consistently than we had done before, and getting those last minute goals. So, but yeah, on balance, England may have gone in as the tournament favourites, but we certainly weren't playing like it, and we certainly weren't the favourites going into the final. So yeah, it's a shame because we have some world-class players there, and it's back to the drawing board, I guess. Maybe going back to the drawing board with a different manager. Don't think
Yeah,
we.
we're going to await to see what happened. I think, well, I'm getting the idea that he probably will stand down. It's just then who replaces him? A continuity manager, which I think is the right thing, or someone new. I mean, some of the names I've heard, even today, I mean, it's are quite hysterical, really, that the idea that Klopp leave Liverpool and then take over as England manager would be very, very odd, and I think incredibly highly unlikely.
Yeah, it does seem quite unlikely. I've even heard Pep being mentioned, which is crazy. I mean, at the
More
very
likely
least,
than Klopp, I feel.
wow, that's an interesting one. I
Yeah,
guess.
because I mean, he's been at City a long time and I think he's looking for a challenge. I know you say interesting. I'd say it's slightly more likely than Klopp, but not massively. It's another one that's quite out there.
The biggest stumbling block would probably be the wages, because these guys are on millions and millions of pounds. And as wealthy as the FA probably are, they are not as wealthy as Man City, or not as well resourced anyway. So it does seem a bit unlikely. I've heard Eddie Howe being mentioned, which would be an interesting one, although he's really not been at Newcastle very long, and he probably feels like he has things to achieve there. So that would seem to be unlikely as well. Even Frank Lampard, who people say has a good footballing brain, but hasn't particularly set the managerial world alight, despite being a very, very good player in his time.
Well, we'll see. I mean, Lee Carsley, I've seen his odds are really shortening because he's the continuity option because he's the under 21s manager and he won the under 21s championship last year for the first time since 84 with people like Cole Palmer and Anthony Gordon in the team. So I would think as a continuity manager, not in the same way as with the tactics, as with someone who's working with the FA and with some of the players, I think I'd be more happier with a continuity manager than a big name, because what does a big name bring you? I don't see that being a positive. I feel that Sven was a big name and he did well. He got us the three quarter finals, but a manager of that caliber and the teams that he had probably should have done better than the quarter finals. So I'm happier with a continuity than someone being a big name.
Southgate, I guess, was the continuity manager himself when he came in. He managed the under 21s.
Yeah.
So there's a lot to be said for that. Someone that comes in, they're already part of the setup. They know a lot of the players. They know a lot of the younger players that are coming through. Yeah, that could be a very good argument. And do you need big name managers? Maybe you don't. And maybe big name managers would get frustrated with the limitations that come with being an international manager rather than a club manager.
I mean, Spain have done it. Spain's manager, the one who's won yesterday, is somebody who was involved in the younger age ranges. So it does work.
And Spain have some amazing young players that have come through, and he may well have been involved with them earlier on in their career. So that does make a lot of sense.
I know this is a very difficult question because we are England fans, but the first half was very cagey. But for the neutral, if there was neutral people out there, the second half was a good game, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. It was far more exciting. There was more space for the Spanish players, definitely. There were more errors from England, unfortunately. But yeah, as a piece of attacking football, as a match where you want to see some goals, the second half was definitely a lot better. Yes, and Spanish were able to play more to their strengths and stretch England and find the space that they needed. So, and of course, Cole Palmer's equaliser was a stunning shot, which any neutral would have been happy to see as well. So Spain's winner wasn't bad either. So I agree. Second half was certainly a lot more interesting for the neutral than the first half. And it was a good game of football. And 2-1 was a respectable scoreline, I think, for England, even if Spain could possibly have won by more.
Yes, they could have done. And I think that's actually a compliment towards England of how well they defended. I think England defended really well. And I think Pickford played really well as well. I think Mark Gouet has been outstanding for England in defence, replacing Harry Maguire. I think the defence has been absolutely outstanding. What can you say? I mean, some of the players haven't been as good as what we expect. But I mean, I think the main rumour is that Harry Kane got injured at the end of last season and is still carrying an injury now, because Harry Kane this season has been the best striker in all of Europe. And he seems to have not looked like that in the tournament, yet still joint top scorer. But he has not been his usual self. And I don't think he's lost a yard. I think we've said in previous podcasts that he's definitely been carrying an injury.
He's getting older as well, though. So, you know, he's not the player he was 5 years ago. And
no, but he scored about 30 something goals in Bundesliga for the first time in a league he's never played in before. So I think he was injured more so than him getting older. That's what I feel. Maybe you're right and I'm wrong. So we'll see.
He was in probably the best team in the Bundesliga by quite a way, and the team that has won it how many times in the last 10 years.
So, yeah, but they managed to come third in a two-horse race. So they struggled this year, which was a bit strange, really, considering Kane scored so many goals, but their defence kind of let them down, and Tuchel paid the price, which is another name that has been spread about for the England job as well. If it doesn't get resolved soon, the names, I reckon, for the job are going to expand more and more, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, they'll just start speculating and putting any name, particularly English managers, next to the job.
Henry Masters?
I think that would be stretching things a little far, Ian.
Sorry, managers, me and you.
Well, I mean, as a duo, yeah, that might work, actually. Good idea.
We might put in an application if Southgate does leave. We'll see what happens. So yeah, top scorer was a real anticlimax, with six players finishing on three goals. As we said before in previous podcasts, no one really took the tournament by storm, goal scoring wise.
No, and as I've said before, it's surprising because there was some brilliant attacking football on display in a lot of the group stage matches, and Spain were the most consistent performers. You'd expect the Spanish striker to have been on the top of those scoring charts, really. England didn't really score enough goals, to be fair. Harry Kane probably should have scored more. Other players we expected more of, like Foden, and maybe Ollie Watkins could have got a few more if he'd had some more minutes. But yeah, it has been surprising. And I don't remember there being too many boring matches in this tournament. So it's a strange one. But I think
It's
it's
just a
been a good tournament. I don't think the lack of, a 6 or 7 goal golden boot winner should be a signal that it's been a bad tournament, because I think it's been very entertaining.
Yes, I did see someone being quite negative about the tournament. There was a certainly a lack of attacking football. And you can't say that if you saw Turkey Georgia. If you'd seen Turkey Georgia, you can't say this tournament was disappointing. Turkey and Georgia themselves, every game they were involved in, they weren't boring matches in any way. And that Turkey Georgia game, I've said it 3 or 4 times now, but it was the best game of the tournament by mile.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a cracking game, and both teams were just a revelation, really, particularly Georgia. I guess we hadn't really seen Georgia in action, or I certainly hadn't anyway. So it was just so refreshing to see them playing so positively, and no big names there, no huge names, but really able to put teams under pressure, score goals. And yeah, they could have beaten Turkey quite easily, and they took the lead against Spain, and maybe they could have got more than one against Spain. So yeah, very impressive performance. And yeah, I agree. There's some very entertaining matches in this tournament.
It's a long tournament, and I think that's sometimes you forget how good some of the group games were when it's nearly a month ago now. I mean, it's a long tournament. This whole month, in my opinion, has been very exciting. There was certainly unpredictability involved in the tournament, and I know you said about England being favourites at the start of the tournament. I'm not really sure what that was based on, really. I would say we were probably top four in the bookies, but I don't know why the bookies had us as favourites because, well, I suppose. Also, we hadn't won a tournament, so to make us favourites is quite a bold statement by the bookmakers. So I think also us getting to the final was unpredictable.
I agree. You wouldn't have actually tipped us to get to the final based on our showing in the group stages. And yeah, it was a pleasant surprise to see that we were able to make it that far. And it was some really inspiring performances and a great team spirit in the end. So absolutely, I agree. I don't think we were ever the favourite to lift the trophy, even though they got to the final last time round. We got to the quarterfinals of the World Cup, of course, but there was nothing to suggest that we'd be able to lift a trophy this year when we hadn't been able to do it for 58 years.
Of course, we've got the World Cup coming up in 2 years in America and Canada and Mexico. But our friend Hugh was asking where the next Euros was. And it's in England, Wales, Scotland, Northern Ireland, and Ireland. It's a home nations and island tournament that's happening in 4 years' time. So I know people have been asking football, will it be coming home? It's going to come home for a month. Whether it will stay or not afterwards is another question. But we're hosting it next.
It should be very exciting and great to have it back in the British Isles and Ireland. And there'll be a lot of excitement. And it's nice to be able to spread it around the other home nations and Ireland so that they get to host some matches as well. And, get to have some matches with big home attendances, because every one of those countries they love their football, don't they? And the interesting question is qualification for that tournament and how that will work, because I heard no one was going to use the automatic qualification. Everyone was going to qualify. Every nation that's hosting was going to qualify in the usual way and then only use the automatic qualification option if certain countries don't qualify through qualification matches.
Oh, that's very interesting because I wouldn't know how it was going to work because when you have five host nations like that, it's if they're all getting a free ride into the tournament, then there are going to be teams that are missing out undeservedly. So I think that's quite a good way of doing it that they have to actually try and qualify themselves. If they don't, then they do get the free ride, but they've got to at least make the effort to qualify themselves. And if they did get the free ride, then, it would add a question to them that maybe they shouldn't be there or not. I don't know.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I think unless they are all outstanding or competent in qualifying, there may be at least one home nation that doesn't make it, because I don't think there are enough automatic spots to go around anyway. I think there might be two. So yeah, they may be able to rescue one nation that doesn't qualify, but not another. But we'll have to see. I think the first time it's been shared between so many countries before.
Yeah.
We'll
Well, it's like
see
that in
how
the
it goes.
World Cup in years to come, but it's all quite complicated now with all these host nations because I know they tried to kind of remove this after the Korea-Japan in 2002, that they didn't want all these joint hosts because they would automatically qualify. But now with Infantino in charge, it seems like everyone's very happy to have all these joint World Cups and Euros now, because I believe the World Cup in 2030, the centenary one, is hosted by Morocco, Portugal, and Spain, and three of the games are being played in South America because of Uruguay and Argentina centenary, because they were hosted and also participated in the final. And I think in 2032 it's Turkey and Italy. So it's all these joint hosts, and like after having a nation like Germany just hosting, it's just one nation. And but now moving forward, it like the World Cup in 2 years' time, you've got Mexico, USA, and Canada. Although we've got 48 teams in that, that's going to be a lot of football to take on board.
Yeah, well, they're expensive things to put on. And in fact, if I remember rightly, England and the other nations were unopposed. So theirs was the only bid for 2028. So, it's too expensive for a lot of countries to carry on their own. So this may be the way forward. Lots of joint bids and, yeah, playing in nations which may not have qualified actually for the finals, which is a shame. But if that's the way it has to be, then that's the way it has to be.
Now, I'm going to take you back to the first podcast, Andy, and when I asked you about who you thought may be strong favourites, and you said Spain. So, what lottery numbers should I be getting?
Well, yeah, they are a team that are well known for playing football the way it should be played. And yeah, they did seem like a strong side to me. And I guess so it's proved, but I was not aware of how good some of their younger players were. And I've been extremely impressed.
Yeah, I certainly agree that I think after their first game, they looked impressive. And I think they were playing the next day after we'd done the first podcast, but they did look impressive. But as you say, I think their squad has really come through, and especially their younger players. I know Olmo, who's been outstanding for them, wasn't their main starter. I think it was Pedri that was the one that got injured. So their squad and how they played, it was just outstanding.
Absolutely. Worthy winners, and maybe England can learn a thing or two. Some people were blaming the Premier League for the sorts of pressures it puts on the players and the style of football, which is what seems to happen every time we lose in a European Championships or World Cup. People talk about the way English play football and it not being the same as the way they play it in countries like Spain. But who knows? It would be nice to know what Spain's secret was.
They played very well, and it was impressive. And it just was a shame that England had to play them, but thankfully they played them in the final, because it was really nice to see England get to another final, and a final on foreign soil as well. Not like 3 years ago when England were playing at Wembley, and also other times when England have done well, like in Euro 96. So it's the first time in a very long time that England have done so well, to do so well away from home, which they haven't done before. So that's what I was really pleased to see.
Yeah, absolutely. They did exceptionally well. I mean, I think best we'd done before on foreign soil was probably semi-finals, Italia 90. So, I think all credit to them for performing like that overseas without the home crowd in attendance. I mean, that match against the Netherlands, I think most of the people in that stadium were actually Dutch. So I think actually most of the people in the stadium on Sunday, though, were actually English. So there we go. It seemed to be a lot of England fans come out of the woodwork for that one.
Is there anything particular that you've really enjoyed from the tournament?
I think just the surprise packages like Georgia, the Ollie Watkins goal, I thought that was fabulous. Just brilliant drama. Jude Bellingham's overhead kick. Yeah, there's been so many great moments in this tournament. And yeah.
I think one of my favourites was the Albania's 22-second goal against Italy. Georgia Turkey, we've said about it so many times. Austria Turkey was another cracking game. The dramatic nature of some of the finishes of games, some of the examples, like you said, with Ollie Watkins as well. I've thoroughly enjoyed the tournament, and I've really enjoyed all the podcasts that we've done, Andy.
Me too, Ian. It's been a pleasure chatting to you about football.
Thanks very much, Andy. It has been a real pleasure.
Thanks, Ian. It's definitely been a pleasure, and we should definitely chat about football again soon.
Oh, that's a tease there that we can put in. Watch this space. Are we going to get the England job, or will there be a new podcast? Wonder what will happen. I just want to say thanks again to Andy. Always a pleasure. Had a real great time doing all these podcasts throughout the tournament. As Andy says there, he's teased something that I think may be in the works, and we'll have news about that soon, I'm sure. This has been the Plesse Podcast, Euro 2024, with my guest Andy Masters as well. I'd also like to thank Veronica Plesse, who appeared on episode 2, which was not my best ever episode. I think she saved it. Hugh James for all the lifts. Very thankful for that. Chris Reed for listening and watching everything. Everyone in Berlin, Andrew, Estelle, Arno, Louise, and Sally. Thanks very much for listening. Also, Duncan Stone and Rob, Johnny, and Ian, who didn't make it onto the podcast due to those sound issues we had on podcast 4. And to anyone who's been listening, on behalf of yourself, Andy, as well, everything's on the website www.djplace.com, Euro 2024. Of course, there'll be some more new updates about what's going to happen in the future as well. I will say there'll be some articles out soon as well about the tournament that I'm going to be writing. I've been Ian Plessard. This has been the Pless Podcast, and we'll see you soon.